Did you know that humans are getting shorter? What does bacon and eggs have to do with the CIA successfully overthrowing the government of Guatemala? Which country has a life expectancy of only 14 years old? Learn the stories behind these and so much more in my new book, Facts That Aren't True. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions. Link in the description. Man, I hate this idiot, but he might be my favorite YouTuber at the moment. So he's got 5 scientific proofs that prove that atheism is false. Before we get to that, this was the funniest thing ever. I flipped through this video. Proof that Pope Francis did not go to hell. Now, even Catholics, a lot of Catholics at least, hate Pope Francis. Or at least the types of Catholics that make internet commentary, you know. Bigoted, hateful people. So I was surprised that he was saying that Pope Francis didn't go to hell. Now, for this entire video, all he does is read from the Bible and talk about what hell is. And his larger point is that Judgment Day hasn't come yet, so people are dead. Nobody's in hell. It doesn't make sense that you could go to hell, be resurrected for Judgment Day, and then go back to hell. Fine. But this is what he says at the end.
And when it comes to Pope Francis, everything that I've seen him say online throughout these past several years that I've been paying attention, I saw no sign of him understanding the gospel at all. So I am highly confident that on that day of judgment, he is going to get his soul and body destroyed in hell.
Pope Francis did not go to hell yet. Okay, on to the main feature. He spends the first part of the video just reading scripture and then using that to prove that everybody knows God exists, so atheists know that God exists, so you can't even be an atheist or something, I suppose. This is just so obviously a contradiction and a monumentally stupid one at that. Fans of the channel will remember that the one time Darth Dawkins ever tried to talk to me, he ran away like a little bitch crying because I proved to him that he doesn't believe this. It's actually really easy. Are zygotes people? Yes. You may disagree, but obviously they don't. Zygotes are people. Do zygotes have beliefs? No. So therefore, it is not true that all people believe in God. Now they can try to run the excuse of, well, after you're born and then you can start forming beliefs, then all of a sudden, magically, you know God exists. So be really great to ask them, exactly when does that happen? When you get a brain when you're still in the womb? At the moment you're born? When the only thing you know is goo goo ga ga? They can't answer this question because it's false and they know it's false, but it's really funny to watch them struggle with it. But even if you grant that once you begin to be able to form beliefs, then all of a sudden you can reject God. Okay, let's just imagine it like this. The zygote is a person, according to them, according to me too, but according to them, is a person, but doesn't believe in God. Okay, but what if that zygote is then born on a remote island like Easter Island? We know people lived there forever. And they never, ever once heard any of the scripture. How can they be rejecting God? How can they know that the Christian God exists? They'll just say it's written on their hearts or something stupid like that. If that's the case, then the zygote has to believe it too. It's just such an obvious and hilarious contradiction, so I encourage you to use that. So what's the first scientific proof that debunks atheism?
Around us. Starting off at number 5 is our observation and experimentation of genetics. Basically, genes contain the information, the instructions for the cells in your body to create certain things. The information within the DNA tells the cells how to act. Now, this is something.
Yeah, that's not entirely true because gene expression is controlled by chemicals that are induced by like cells being in proximity to each other. So how does your hand know when to stop growing and where the thumb side should go and the pinky side should go? Well, the gene expression is what sort of controls for that, but there's actually a lot of intercellular communication that's done chemically that mediates the gene expression. So that is being a little bit pedantic and nitpicky, but it's important to point that out because this we've seen plenty of his content before. He's incredibly incompetent. And it is really funny how he is very much Dunning-Kruger-esque. He knows very little, and he assumes he knows so much. And he talks very confidently about it.
That is well studied, and everybody agrees upon it because, you know, it's real science rather than coming up with stories about the past. We know that genes contain information. And what do we observe about information?
Valence electrons contain information. This is another great counter argument you can make with people that say this. The chemical properties of an element are predicted by its configuration of valence electrons. So before hydrogen forms bonds with oxygen, you can predict exactly how that will go and what kind of molecule it will make. So therefore, atoms have information. So the point of that is, this doesn't grant them anything. The point of using that is, if DNA has information in it, if a molecule has information in it, then so do atoms. What they're trying to do is say that all of a sudden, or for whatever reason, DNA is something that contains information, whereas this doesn't, or this doesn't, or this doesn't. And that is just a, I don't know if we want to call it cherry picking. I guess I would call it cherry picking, but it's completely and utterly fallacious and false. It's kind of like a reification fallacy, but not really. Reification is where you say something abstract is real. So if I say, like, the economy demands that we cut interest rates, it did. There's no such real entity as the economy. And saying that genes contain information is true, but only in the sense that that's just how we choose to describe them. I can choose to describe any form of inert matter as having information, which means it's not special.
In every other area of life, well, it goes back to a mind. I have this Greek textbook, and you know what this...
Yeah, so if it has information, that goes to a mind, yeah. So, again, you can grant... Like, you can... They never accept this, but use the valence electron argument or whatever. And even if they say, well, that just proves my point, then what you've exposed is that all they're doing is engaging in circular reasoning. Okay, if it's all the way down to the level of the atom and the electron, then that means literally every single thing in the universe, according to you, is designed, which means you have no way of knowing what is or what is not designed. You do not have a symmetry breaker. All you can do is beg the question. Everything is designed and comes from a mind. How do we know that? Because there's information, and information comes from a mind.
This contains information to be passed on, okay? Now understand this. This book right here is not a mind. This is something that contains information. So it's not like we're saying that DNA is a mind and it has information and it's actually consciously telling the cells in your body to do certain things. Now, there's obviously tons of AI out there that copy and send information, but they aren't the origin of information. You have to program these things to mimic human speech and behavior. Again, this is observed, testable, and repeatable in the present. We have seen this. If there is a piece...
That it contains information is observable, testable in the present? No, that's just how you choose to describe it.
Of information out there, its source is a rational mind. Does it really make any sense for me to look...
And we certainly don't have any scientific experiments or anything that prove that it comes from a mind.
Get this Greek textbook and suppose that it came about through random chance, you know, the ink came to the paper.
And there's the straw manning of the position. You believe in blind luck and random chance. No, we don't. Chemistry, the laws of physics, these happen not for teleological reasons, but there's a reason. They don't have reasons for why they happen, but they happen for a reason.
And just form this Greek textbook. No, that is not reasonable. There is nothing like that in the created order. Now,
but magic is reasonable. Why? Because
Atheists have their responses to this, as well as the next three, and this isn't the greatest proof, because the atheist can always pull out what we would call an atheist of the gaps argument. Oh, science will figure this out someday. There doesn't have to be a god out there who...
Atheist of the gaps. Oh, man.
...is the ultimate source of the information in DNA. They can always just push it to the side and say, oh, science will figure that out sometime. We have a...
We figured this out, like, literally decades ago, dipshit.
Bunch of other theories that can account for this. And obviously by theories, they mean stories that could account for this, stuff that they just make up. And
you mean, like, a book that says snakes can talk?
Honestly, even I myself, I'm not commonly going to use this argument because there's some problems with it. If we are ultimately relying on our own senses and what we believe to be design and information, the only way that we can come to certain knowledge about that is if we ourselves are omniscient, okay? I've used this example before, but let's say there's someone in public, you're at the mall, and someone's waving at you, and so you wave back. You saw this information out there, this person waving at you, you assume that, oh, it's designed for you. This also applies to the cosmological argument. You thought the cause of that person waving at you is because they recognize you and
the cosmological argument.
They're waving at you. But no, it turns out they're waving at someone behind you. So you, in your own mind, you cannot be totally sure if what you're looking at.
That's kind of a clever way of framing the anthropic principle argument. Oh, you see it and you read into it that it's for you when in reality it's not that way. So the constants of the universe, an observer says, oh, they look like that because it was designed to look like that for me to observe it. No, if a universe has the property of being observable, then that would just be an innate bias that an observer would make. It's not all it is confirmation bias and circular reasoning.
That is real information, real design, if all you have to go on is your five senses and scientific observation. So genetic information within DNA is a good proof, but there's always something that someone can come up with to argue.
He hardly opined on it at all.
Argue against it. It's a good thing, though, that we know for certain that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God.
For certain.
And the Word was God. And
this is literally... I don't know what legacy standard Bible, so I don't know. There's so many different variants of the Bible, but the majority of Bibles have this thrown out because even Christians know that this was thrown in there centuries after the Gospel of John was written for somebody to just make it like it was a deliberate Christology that was just thrown into it. Oh, we have this thing about the Trinity. Well, let me add something that's not original to the text to just to support that. It's called the Johannine comma. This is so well known.
It was in the beginning with God, and all things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. God created the world through his one and only begotten Son, Jesus Christ. The ultimate source of all information, genetic information indeed, is God himself. He wrote our genes. He is the one who creates everyone exactly as he designed. And yes, that includes blindness, deafness. The scriptures literally tell us this about God. He decides when someone is born blind or paralyzed or whatever. It is all for the glory of God. Now, on to number four. For this one, I'm going to say
blindness and deafness is for the glory of God? God, these people. I don't remember if I said this earlier. I actually hate this idiot.
Take some help from Charles Darwin himself, the famous God-hating atheist who came up with the story.
He was not an atheist, and he actually was going to school to be a minister, and he fell upon natural selection by just objectively looking at the world. He became agnostic later in life, but he never... This is actually really funny because half the people in his camp say that Darwin converted at his deathbed, and then you have whatever this is.
not theory, of evolution. I have a video from a few months ago where I explain why evolution, literally on its own terms, cannot be called a theory, because it is impossible to test and observe and prove scientifically, even if the story of evolution is true, you know, that we used to be fish, our ancestors, you know, gradually evolved over millions of years. That's its story, and even if it's true, you can't scientifically prove that, based on Darwin's theory, that is. Anyways, this is what he said. To suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical and chromatic aberration, could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. Yes, I agree.
He's actually a lying piece of shit now. This is confirmed. Charles Darwin goes on for several pages to explain how an eye could have evolved right after making that quote. And he's strategically leaving that out. You can just look at the way he wrote it. Seems absurd in the highest degree. He goes on by way of analogy to say that when people said the sun stays still and the world turns around, that seemed to common consensus to be absurd, but we now know that it's not. And then Darwin talks about how if we could find numerous gradations or variants of eyes from simple to more complex can be found, then that would be supporting evidence for the eye, like the modern compound eye or whatever, having been evolved. There are numerous different eyes that we see in the animal kingdom. Eyes have evolved 40 different times independently. If an eye has to be created by a creator because they're so incredibly special, the fact that there are multiple different types of eyes, that is very much so damning evidence against the idea that a visual apparatus needs to be specially designed.
Seems absurd. Because it is absurd. Again, that kind of goes back to number five. Like, do we really think that this book came about on its own? That's what the theory of evolution says. Something that's way more complex than that book came about on its own. But specifically for number four, this is what we call...
He's trolling, right? Like, it's just rage bait. That's what this is.
Irreducible complexity. We're using...
Can you be this dumb?
The eye for the example on this one. Here's a diagram of the eye. Pupil, iris, lens, retina, the optic nerves. You have all these different parts.
Your diagram doesn't contain blind spots, something an intelligent designer would not do.
And what the evolutionists literally cannot even begin to explain is which one of these possibly evolved first. Like the
retina. It's incredibly easy to explain, actually.
I cannot work with one of these missing. Suppose there's an organism out.
Yes, it literally can, because eyes that don't have lenses exist. Eyes that don't have a cornea exist. Eyes that don't have an iris exist. Holy shit, dude.
Out there that doesn't have any eyes. And nature, of course, nature has decided that it's preferable for this creature to have eyes in this environment. Well, first of all, again, with the theory, you couldn't possibly...
Nature doesn't decide things. It's not how it works. He's incapable of thinking of the world in terms other than his worldview. And so even when he tries to understand different worldviews, he just puts his worldview onto it.
Know what's preferable outside of which creatures survive. But let's just say that creature starts evolving the optic nerve first, or the retina. In what world is it biologically advantageous to have parts of an eye rather than the whole eye?
My sweet summer child, you're such a fucking idiot. Cosmos did a really cool job of explaining how vision can go from something that literally just has the ability to detect light, on how that could be advantageous, to how more and more primitive eyes gradually gain the ability to see an increasingly sharper image of the world. I highly encourage you to check that out. I'm not going to show it here, just in case, you know, my video gets demonetized or something like that. But the other thing that's so fucking stupid about this is I write about this in Rational Answers to Stupid Questions, but I use the example of camouflage. So, but it works kind of the same way. An organism that has its body or an organ doesn't function entirely, wouldn't be advantageous. Therefore, natural selection couldn't possibly work on it because the thing has to be fully there in its modern inception, otherwise whatever. No, dumbass. The opposite of an eye is nothing can see. So if you have even the slightest rudiment of an eye, you have an advantage that other organisms don't have. It's the same with camouflage. We have leaf mimicking insects, and they are very extraordinary in their appearance. But all it has to start off with is the insect is just green to blend in with the environment. And then maybe its body is a little flatter than others. So it starts to look just a tiny bit more like a leaf. Even if it only looks 0.1% more like a leaf than the other members of its species do, that, especially with insects, because of how prolific they are in their breeding, that survival advantage, although small, is going to manifest itself after several generations. And then you get directional selection. So the ones that are even a tiny little bit flatter than that start to be more preferable for selection. And then after they become very flat, then the shape changes, and the fake veins in there can then start to be selected for. This is middle school level stupid.
What in the world would cause a creature to start growing parts of the eye that don't work, knowing that somehow, but they're not knowing because it's not con.
God, you are. He's so fucking stupid. No, eyeballs didn't start off with atrophied, like all of these parts, but atrophied and not working, and then gradually they got better. Just the inner. You can all see how stupid he is. I'm running out of words for it, so I'll let him speak for himself.
Conscious, natural selection, Mother Nature, you know, they use these terms, they personify nature, but nature's not actually making choices because, you know, we can't have a higher power. What could have possibly caused this organism to start growing part of an eye, knowing that this eye, what's growing, what it's evolving into, is only going to become an eye millions of years down the line, perhaps? It's not going to see the benefits of its evolution in its environment from developing this eye until way later. Also,
yeah, you'd have to literally not look into any of the, like that Cosmos video. You could show that to him and it would brilliantly point out that the way you're saying this happens isn't the way scientists think it happens. It's the way an idiot that doesn't know anything, doing his best job, tries to understand it. You're literally using all of your mental power and still coming up with an explanation that's extremely stupid and not the way it is proposed. So you're not representing the opposition. If he took the 5 seconds it takes to understand that the way he's arguing this is stupid, then I would hope, although he's a liar, the Darwin quote obviously bears that out, but I would hope he would never make this stupid argument. So this proves that he hasn't spent any amount of time thinking about this.
So besides that, even if there is a certain creature.
And why is that? Well, it goes back to what he always does in these. Well, I know that what I believe is true because what I believe is true, and my book says that what I believe is true. So obviously he's never looked into it.
An organism with no eyes. Clearly, it's fit to survive in its environment. Why would it need to start developing eyes? It's surviving just fine. Also, one last point on the topic of evolution. The existence of dinosaurs, I believe, proves the biblical worldview. I highly recommend you do your research into the dinosaurs, my favorite being the biggest dinosaur to ever live, the Argentinosaurus. It's a sauropod. According to the American Museum of Natural History, one of the very largest, the huge Argentinosaurus, may have grown to 90 tons. 90 tons. You can look up all these illustrations, and I just think it's really cool to think about all these animals that Noah brought onto the ark.
Yeah, there were a bunch of sauropods on the ark. That would have worked. What did they eat? Like, people have run this, and they've been able to figure out, yeah, it's impossible, because you could not build a boat that could float that would have these animals on it and have the amount of food to feed them. So creationists now tend to say, well, they had baby sauropods on the ark.
and that Job saw and that Adam named on the first day of his existence. Now, let's remember that dinosaur as we take a look at the heaviest land animal today, still living. The giant African elephant, up to 6 tons. This thing is tiny compared to the sauropod.
Where could he possibly be going with this?
We have elephants living today, up to 6 tons. They are fit to survive in their environments. Remember, according to evolution, everything can be traced back to a single-celled organism.
Is he gonna say that there should be 90-ton animals today?
And eventually evolved into everything that we see today. How does it come about that you have an animal, 6 tons, then over a few million years, 7 tons, 8 tons, 9 tons, 10 tons, 11 tons, 20 tons, 30 tons, 40 tons, 50 tons. Oh, still not quite fit. There's some more adaptation that it still needs to go through.
Yes, the gradual change over time. I can't believe that. It was done by using magic. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. How can you exist like this? How can you just say that that makes more sense?
It's more advantageous to become 60 tons and then 70 and then 80, 90. Like, why? Now, again, atheists...
Why did God create them that way?
On this,
if you can't answer that question, then what you believe in is false.
Issue have their answers, they have their arguments and theories, rather stories, of course, as to why these animals got so large, why nature selected for them to become so ginormous. But we know from Genesis chapter 1 that God said, on the sixth day, let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind. This includes the dinosaurs. Yes, dinosaurs and humans inhabited the same earth on day 6. And it was so. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing of the ground after its kind, and God saw that it was good. Real quick, very common misconception is that the dinosaurs and the lions were carnivorous from the beginning. But no, verse 30 says, to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to every living thing that creeps on.
This guy's Ken Hovind's hero. Man, messenger of truth, maybe you should go to Dinosaur Adventureland. And then you could either drown in a lake or get molested, which those are the two things that happen when young people go to that park. So please go.
On the earth which has life, I have given every green plant for food, and it was so. So no, dinosaurs were not eating each other. Lions weren't chasing after other animals to eat them. No, the result of animals eating each other, including humans eating animals, that is a result of the fall. Death came after the fall. And so this is why creation groans, all of creation. It's not just humanity that is suffering, it is also the animals. And so when we look at these fossils of dinosaurs, we're reminded that, hey, this is what happens when we rebel against the creator, which is what the atheists are doing when they're coming up with all these crazy stories about our past, rather than submitting to the truth of God's word. Why were dinosaurs so comically large? Why do any creatures have eyes? Well, because that's how God had designed these things.
How is that an explanation? How did... Jeez.
The book of Job, God pointed to the behemoth and said, hey, can you subdue this creature? I believe the description of that creature fits a sauropod, but the point is when Job looks at...
It says it has a tail like a cedar tree and shakes the ground when it walks, I think maybe is in there, and that's basically it. So no, it's not a description of anything.
Job, God pointed to the animal. The answer is obviously not. I cannot touch this animal. I can't even hurt it with my bare hands. Even with the greatest tools that I can come up with, I can't. This idea that our ancestors are fish. Now, moving on to number 3, you can actually see this one with a good pair of binoculars or a telescope. The planet Saturn in our solar system. This is from Wikipedia, but its ring system. Saturn has the most extensive and complex ring system of any planet in the solar system. The rings consist of particles in orbit around the planet made.
Oh no, is he gonna say Saturn's rings are only whatever it is, like 100 million years old, therefore the universe can't be billions of years old?
Made almost entirely of water ice, with a trace component of rocky material. I'm just going to be focusing on Saturn for this video, but when it comes to every planet in our solar system, you can point out something about it that the atheists don't really have a good answer for. Now, according to the atheist universe,
Well, in Genesis, it says God stretched out his hand and created the heavens. We have an explanation for it.
Versus 13 billion years old. That's a made up number, of course. And as science progresses,
it's a scientifically confirmed number.
And we get more real data from the real world we live in. They keep pushing that number further back. And
no, they don't.
Back. And they say that our solar system is about 4.5 billion years old. And so Saturn's out there with this ring system made mostly of ice. And, you know, there's this thing in our solar system called the sun, and it's constantly giving off UV light radiation. And again, the stuff that I'm telling you here, it's not
proving that it wasn't created by a benevolent creator, because that gives us cancer.
Debatable. It's just how we're interpreting the facts and the evidence that we see in the observable universe. So basically, 4.5 billion years, why is there still this super bright, icy, and reflective ring system that Saturn has? There's a bunch of other things that could impact Saturn's rings as well over millions, billions of years. So essentially, it's estimated that the ring system of Saturn can only last up to 100 million years or so. And yeah, sure, that's a long time, but still way less than 4.5 billion years.
Fucking A. Here's an equivalent argument. Humans, on average, live to be around 70. Therefore, the universe cannot be more than 70 years old. That is equivalent. You're taking a technique that we don't use to date anything and say that that's how old everything is. You're ignoring the idea that unique events can happen throughout the course of history of everything. And the most damning thing is the same kind of science that gives us some sort of confidence about that age for the rings is the exact same kind of science that tells us the universe is billions of years old. So you just cherry pick the science to try to disprove the science in the most amateurish and stupid way possible.
The simple biblical answer to this is that, well, Saturn, just like the rest of the stars, and biblically speaking, star is just something that is out there in space, and it's a light in the...
No, biblically speaking, that's not what stars are. So this is really cute. Well, biblically speaking, so the Bible's wrong. The Bible has nothing to say about planets because people that wrote that book had no idea what they were. Any opinion they would have had on them would have been that planets are the same thing as stars. They just move. So then there's this this cope argument that, biblically speaking, the truth in this case wasn't revealed because biblically speaking, it was written for that time and place and etc. No, your flat earth geocentric book is wrong and you can't cope your way out of it.
The sky. That's what a star is, biblically speaking. So when we're speaking scientifically today, we don't refer to the planets as stars. Just understand.
But the Bible did because that's what they thought.
Understand that. But based on the biblical terminology, we know that Saturn was made on day 4. Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years.
I like how what my stupid genocide book says is the same thing as what we know, according to him.
And, you know, it was so.
And by I like it, I mean I fucking hate this idiot.
There was evening and morning, a fourth day. Saturn is about 6,000 years old, just like the rest of the universe. God designed Saturn to be that way and to be beautiful from the human eye. The heavens are indeed telling the glory of God, and the expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Saturn is telling the glory of God, not the glory of random chance universe popping into existence for literally no reason at all. If you want to learn a bit more about the solar system, then check out this video from Jason Lyle. He's an astrophysicist. He's one of my favorite scientists alive right now. He has a lot of good stuff. Now, moving on to number 2, sticking with the solar system, comets, the existence of comets.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I am so tired of debunking the stupid comet thing.
Atheists cannot explain coherently, that is. Comets are icy, dusty, and rocky bodies that orbit the sun, often exhibiting a bright glowing tail as they approach the sun due to the vaporization of ice and dust, and are considered remnants from the early solar system. And basically, it's a similar issue with the comets, this icy material orbiting close to the sun. How long is that going to last? Well, not billions.
10,000 years, right?
Millions of years is the answer. And again, this isn't something that's debatable. Atheistic scientists will agree.
No, it's just that you're so fucking stupid and you don't understand what you're talking about.
With this analysis, they're not going to last longer than 100,000 years or so.
I've heard 10,000, but whatever. Okay, dummy, here's Halley's Comet, right? And Halley's Comet is way the F out there most of the time. This is why it has such a long orbital period, 76 years or whatever. It goes way outside of Pluto. When it is out here, the gases that make up Halley's Comet don't sublimate. They don't evaporate. It's too cold way out here. That only happens when the comet is about as close to the sun as Mars is. Comets do not spend very much time at all that close to the sun. So you can see Halley's Comet come in, it gets faster and faster, and then zoom, it is out of there. Now I have this set to 1 second equals 2 years, but it's going to take so incredibly long for that comet to... Actually, that's not Halley's Comet. I don't know which comet. It says Halley Bopp, but it's not the right one. So a comet can have an orbital period of multiple decades, but only a few weeks of that orbital period will it be close enough to the sun for the gases on it to evaporate. So there may be 100,000 years worth of ice there, but it doesn't disappear after 100,000 years. Take the amount of time it spends close enough to the sun for that, and then divide 100,000 years by that, and then that would tell you how many cycles it would have to do, and then multiply it by the orbital period of the comet, and assuming my mental math is correct, that would tell you how long that comet will last. But it's not even that simple, because in the solar system, things move around. I don't know if you knew that or not, but things move around in the solar system. Comets get their path changed all the time because you can do that arithmetic and then you can find out that at a maximum that only gets us to a billion years or whatever. Comets do not have stable orbits. They have their orbits changed and thrown around by other comets, by planets, all kinds of things. A comet can be lurking deep in the solar system, never getting close to the sun, and then some sort of gravitational influence changes its trajectory, and all of a sudden, it has a highly elliptical orbit around the sun. Again, completely incompetent, unlearned dipshit. You can't say things like that without either being brainwashed, ignorant, or just a liar. Because it doesn't take long to find out why the arithmetic here is total bullshit.
The technology we have today, we've been able to measure the size of comets, and as they orbit the sun, they lose some mass. And of course, you know, if it goes around again and again and again, it's going to cease to be. Now again, with this proof, along with all the other ones, they're always going to come up with some sort of answer. Oh, there must be some sort of mechanism out there in the universe that we can't prove nor disprove. We haven't observed anything like this. There must be comets just coming from somewhere, being generated out there in the universe.
Nobody thinks that.
It's always this, again, it's atheism of the gaps. We don't have an explanation, but we just can't accept God being the answer. We can't accept the Bible being the most straightforward, clear answer to all these questions.
Straightforward and clear?
The Earth simply is not as old as you think it is. God created the universe in 6 days, as the Bible says. Now, the number one scientific proof against atheism is the existence of science itself. Science disproves atheism.
What?
Concept of science itself disproves atheism. You see, science depends on this thing we call the uniformity of nature. That is, nature, that is the world that we live in, is uniform, that is the same. An example of this is gravity, the warping of space and time, not necessarily a force, but that's irrelevant. All we have to do as Christians to point out the atheists' inconsistencies is ask them why they don't think that gravity is all of a sudden going to...
He's just going to say the problem of induction proves that atheism is false because we believe that God will sustain the laws of nature to be... You literally don't believe that. If you believe that any miracle has ever taken place, like, God, and they do. Okay, so... This is dishonest, but here's... the equivalent argument that actually works the way he thinks it works. Christianity proves that science cannot possibly be reliable because Christianity invokes miracles occurring, and miracles violate the laws of physics and the constants of the universe and the laws of nature. Therefore, you cannot validate any scientific study ever. The fact that the resurrection supposedly occurred means that now every single claim about anything ever can just be chalked up to, no, that didn't happen because of gravity, that happened because God made it happen that way. And there's, we can no longer do science. Again, that's a bad argument. It's not that bad, actually, but it's a pretty bad argument. But it's an equivalent argument that actually works the way he's trying to make his argument work. Now, if we just take the problem of induction, it is our presupposition that the future will be like the past. But it's our presupposition because there's nothing going on other than these natural law or whatever governing the way the universe works. You can't do that with God. It literally, according to Christianity, you guys think the rapture is going to happen. You think God is going to come and intervene and literally destroy the entire world. You can't possibly have any faith about the future in this worldview. God cannot ground anything and serve as a presuppositional justification for uniformity in nature going forward. The worldview literally necessitates the rejection of that.
You stop working, you know, because according to them, we live in a chance universe, random universe. There is no creator who is upholding the world by his very power and consistent nature. Ask them this, like, and this is a very honest question. It's not aimed to trap them in this, oh, we're better than you atheists. No, genuinely try to answer this question. The fact is they can't. So why do you, Mr. Atheist, think that you're not going to start floating up in the sky within 5 seconds from now?
Oh yeah, and then the point I forgot to point out is that is our presupposition. And then what they so dishonestly do is they pretend that their presupposition is what they know rather than it being a presupposition. All presuppositionalists do that. It's so nauseating.
Again, the atheists love to think that they have all the facts and the evidence on their side, but just simply ask them, you know, to scientifically prove that he's not going to start loading up into space 5 seconds from now. Number one, he can't do that because we can't observe the future. Nobody has observed the future and tested the future.
Including you.
Now, secondly,
so you can't possibly have a worldview that validates this?
Attempted answer that every atheist is going to try to give you is that, oh, in the past, I haven't started floating up, and so it's reasonable to conclude that in the future, I'm not going.
It is reasonable to conclude. It just isn't proven.
Going to start randomly floating into the sky as well. Now, this right here is textbook circular argumentation.
Inductive inferences is not circular reasoning.
And that's fallacious. I am justified in my belief that I'm not going to start floating into the sky 5 seconds from now because 10 seconds earlier, 5 seconds after that, I didn't start floating up into the
That's literally evidence, dipshit.
Sky. So the atheist's answer here is that he believes that the future is going to be, it's going to remain uniform. It's going to be similar to the past.
Yes, which is something you don't believe.
Because in the past, the future was like the past.
And you don't believe that the past was like the present because you believe in miracles.
So the future is like the past because the future is like the past. It's so fascinating how the atheists, when you actually get them into a corner like this, they do the very thing that they accuse me of doing, which is saying that the Bible is true because the Bible says it's true. I have never made that argument. They.
Oh, God. Jeez.
We know for certain that in the beginning was the Word and the Word was with God.
Oh, you lying piece of shit.
Think that I make that argument, but I don't. And this right here has been a problem for atheists for centuries now. Like, their very claim to science and knowledge and facts and reason and all this stuff, observation, testability, all of it rests on this fallacious argument that upholds their scientific observation. Oh, the future's like the past because the future's like the past. This is why I put this argument at number one. It's because it literally cannot be responded to by atheists. They have no rational explanation for why science even exists in the first place.
This isn't an argument for the existence of science. You are so incompetent. Is he ever going to give us his answer, solution for this?
why nature remains generally the same. And not only that nature remains generally the same, but why us humans even assume that in the first place. Why?
Again, the problem of induction is just... it's just saying you can't scientifically prove it. It says nothing about the existence of science or anything like that.
Why don't we wake up hoping that we're not going to float into the sky? You know, after all, chance universe. That's how we should be acting if atheism...
God can literally change that at any time. So you can't... So you can't justify that you won't float in the future that you won't float away in the future. There we go.
Were true. But no, biblically, there's a very clear answer. Genesis chapter 8, God promises, while all the days of the earth remain, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. We are justified in...
I mean, we just know that will eventually cease because the sun will grow into a red supergiant. And then the earth will be destroyed.
And assuming that the future, even though we haven't observed the future, we can't scientifically prove this objectively with only our own five senses that the future is going to be like the past. We are still justified in assuming this because our creator God, who loves his creation, upholds it with consistency because he's rational and he does not change. And
the way he's saying that it can be proven by that is just, I fucking hate this idiot. Well, that was awful. I hated it. But hopefully you enjoyed it. I'll see you tomorrow.